CBS's Ian Lee reports from near Gaza.
Israel continues to expand its war in Gaza. According to the UN, nearly 2 million Palestinians have now been displaced from the fighting.
More huge waves are expected in California after massive surf Thursday brought flooding and damage. Dan Roundtree lives in Ventura.
Washed down the street like it was a river that turned and went into our complex and flooded it completely. So we're all trying to recoup.
More than 120 people were rescued when the ice floe they were fishing on in northern Minnesota broke off. Nicole Biaggi is with the Department of Natural Resources.
It's really not uncommon in the sense that it does happen from year to year that people go out there and the ice breaks away and we have to rescue them.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin voters could see some big changes in 2024 and beyond. Mike Moen explains.
New political boundaries are expected based on a state Supreme Court ruling, while some pro-democracy organizers hope for a different way of choosing candidates. Last week's court decision resulted in current legislative maps drawn up by Republicans being tossed out over arguments they were unconstitutional. Researchers have long noted that Wisconsin has some of the most gerrymandered maps in the country. Bob Moline with the Western Wisconsin group Grow Action says he's happy with the outcome. He hopes the state takes things a step further by adopting Final Five voting.
It reduces the incentives that create those toxic, hate-filled campaign ads. It reduces the incentives that reward gridlock and extremism in our elections today.
The process essentially creates a nonpartisan primary, with the top five vote-getters moving on to the general election. In that second step, a ranked-choice-style system would be used. Analysts say a potential setback under this approach is voters not being able to discern between moderate and extreme candidates. As for redistricting changes, Moline says it wouldn't be surprising to see Republicans appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. But he says he's still hopeful Wisconsin voters will soon get a chance to cast their ballots under updated boundaries.
This is the best chance we have for truly fair maps, and it's the right process.
Policymakers have a couple of weeks to submit new maps that will be reviewed by court-appointed consultants. Republican leaders have insisted their methods in creating the maps were fair and legal. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, some patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy, 34. Snow tonight, 27. For Sunday, mostly cloudy, a high near 34. A little bit on the breezy side. For New Year's Day, sunshine and 32. For Tuesday, partly sunny, 35. That's Severe Studios weather.
Currently 26 degrees.
Did you know Wisconsin Rapids used to be two towns, one on each side of the river? Centralia consolidated with Grand Rapids, but residents wanted a name change. Too much mail ended up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, not Wisconsin. Wisconsin Rapids became the official city name in 1920. For Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, I'm Terry Barr.
Some of the most gerrymandered maps in the country. Bob Moline with the Western Wisconsin group Grow Action says he's happy with the outcome. He hopes the state takes things a step further by adopting Final Five voting.
It reduces the incentives that create those toxic, hate-filled campaign ads. It reduces the incentives that reward gridlock and extremism in our elections today.
The process essentially creates a nonpartisan primary, with the top five vote-getters moving on to the general election. In that second step, a ranked-choice-style system would be used. Analysts say a potential setback under this approach is voters not being able to discern between moderate and extreme candidates. As for redistricting changes, Moline says it wouldn't be surprising to see Republicans appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. But he says he's still hopeful Wisconsin voters will soon get a chance to cast their ballots under updated boundaries.
This is the best chance we have for truly fair maps. And it's the right process.
Policymakers have a couple of weeks to submit new maps that will be reviewed by court-appointed consultants. Republican leaders have insisted their methods in creating the maps were fair and legal. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowen.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Eagle 1490.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sprinkles or flurries today, light snow tonight, highs around 36 today, overnight low of 27. For Sunday, chance of snow, a high near 35. Clear skies Sunday night, low of 21. For New Year's Day, sunshine and highs in the mid-30s.
Currently 33 degrees.
The talk that matters to you and fits your lifestyle.
Tune out all the yelling and screaming.
Come soaring with Eagle 1490.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
It is Saturday, December 30th, 2023. This is the final broadcast of our Saturday morning exploration with you of all things law, government, and justice in America. Thank you for once again joining me and my producer, Anya. We're here in the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. But soliciting, encouraging your questions, your comments, your inquiries from throughout the state of Wisconsin, get to us by calling us at 844-967-2789 or send us an inquiry, write something out, tell me what your question, your comment is, and send it to us through the Civic Media website, the Civic Media app, your broadcast station, finding our broadcast this morning and being a part of our discussion about these important issues. Right before the top of the hour break, talking about a number of cases pending before our United States Supreme Court that have the potential in 2024 to redefine the relationship between federal courts and our many federal agencies. These three cases involving the so-called administrative state, cases that the Supreme Court will decide that is going to redefine the ways in which potentially federal judges defer or do not defer to the agency officials, the experts in our federal government. And talking right before the top of the hour break then about a second tranche of cases involving Donald Trump in particular. These going to define quite literally how the campaign proceeds and whether or not in 2024, Donald Trump's trials, the criminal trial in particular, going to be underway sometime in 2024, how that's going to play out and the impact that it may have upon the campaign in the coming year. We talked right before the break about this series of cases coming out of places like Colorado and now Maine, other places deciding about whether or not Donald Trump's name will be on a primary ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Maine joining Colorado this past week in finding that Donald Trump's name will not be there. A prediction from me based upon the past history of the Supreme Court and the options that it has not to address this issue, that the United States Supreme Court, when it comes to those 14th Amendment cases percolating up to it, the ones that everybody is focusing on right now, is going to find that Donald Trump will remain on the ballots in states across the union, could do it on a number of different procedural grounds, including a decision about who needs to make that determination of whether or not a particular official has engaged in insurrection. What we have now is we've got at least one Secretary of State. We've got at least one Supreme Court making that determination. One of the options before the United States Supreme Court is to say that the federal legislature, the Congress, is the only body that can make that determination. Bottom line is all kinds of things out there that would give the Supreme Court an option not to decide the case and to keep Donald Trump on the ballot or could address the issue squarely and determine whether or not Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, whether he is subject to restriction under that particular provision of our Constitution. All kinds of things could happen there. Likely, once again, the Supreme Court going to keep him on the ballot. Not an easy case, but certainly among the three, one of the easier matters for it to resolve because of these other options out there. The second set of cases, second and third set of cases out there, have to do with the criminal prosecution now underway in the District of Columbia District Court, a case being prosecuted by Jack Smith, the special counsel, a singular defendant. His name is Donald Trump. Four counts in the indictment. We'll chat about those in just a moment or so. And the question is whether or not the president, the former president, has absolute immunity, executive absolute immunity for the things he did while he was in the presidency. Here again, the prediction is that the Supreme Court addressing that issue, the Supreme Court, when it does take up the issue from the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, they've got to say that the president of the United States of America is not above the law. You recall very significantly that Richard Nixon, after he was removed from office, he resigned from office, effectively removed by virtue of the political pressure placed upon him in the wake of disclosures about his violations of federal law, his basically turning his back on the basic duties and responsibilities of the presidency. He said very famously that if the president does it, that makes it legal. And everyone at that time and to this day regards that as a completely inaccurate, unfounded, wild interpretation of the law and of the rule of law in the United States of America. That's the same kind of issue that's right now before the D.C. Court of Appeals for its decision, ultimately going to the Supreme Court. The question there, of course, is what will the Supreme Court do? Prediction here that the Supreme Court will, in this case, hand Donald Trump a loss, if you will, and tell him that, no, he's not immune. He's not immune from prosecution. The case needs to go on. Question, of course, as we've talked before, about when exactly that all-important trial will be conducted. Tanya Chutkan has already indicated that she will probably suspend some of the dates that are going forward even right now while this matter is resolved. This, again, it's not an easy question for the Supreme Court to decide, but it's not difficult either. And so with respect to the 14th Amendment, a case where the Supreme Court will probably give Donald Trump a victory and keep him on the ballots. Supreme Court will also probably pair that, maybe not contemporaneously, but pair it with a loss to him, telling him no, indeed, he is subject to that criminal prosecution in the District of Columbia District Court. And then we get finally to the one that is underplayed by the media. Not a lot of attention given this one, but we have talked about this at great length previously, and it has to do with the scope of the obstruction charge, which is central to the January 6th case against Donald Trump. How does this come about? The Supreme Court has agreed to hear this again as a third focus of its analysis that could, in fact, upend the prosecutions of hundreds of rioters who were prosecuted and convicted for their attack on the Capitol on January 6th of 2021. The case that the court agreed to hear involves a fellow named Joseph Fisher. We've chatted about him before. He was indicted on 7 charges for his role in that Capitol attack. And prosecutors in particular say that he assaulted the police as Congress met again to certify the results of the 2020 election. He was charged, among other things, with an obstruction count. And the statute there is 18 U.S.C. section 1512. And that is the all-important statute that's now in before the United States Supreme Court in connection with the Fisher case. F-I-S-C-H-E-R is how you spell his name. Judge Carl Nichols had previously determined, he's the trial court, that indeed Fisher's motion to dismiss the prosecution had merit. He said that the law, this particular statute, required the defendants take some action with respect to a document, record, or other object that was missing plainly from Fisher's conduct at the Capitol. A divided 3-judge panel, the D.C. Court of Appeals, took that up, and they reversed Judge Nichols, and they ruled that this statute applies to all forms of corrupt obstruction of an official proceeding, giving it a much broader description, a much broader understanding of what Section 1512 says. And Mr. Fisher, among other defendants, have ultimately asked the Supreme Court to decide whether or not the District of Columbia Circuit Court is right. And why is that important? Well, again, it could potentially affect the convictions, the prosecutions of hundreds among the over 1,000 defendants who've been convicted, tried, sentenced for their conduct on January 6th. Significantly, it is important to note that two of the four counts in the federal election interference indictment against Donald Trump are also based upon that same statute. Again, that's not that the specific case of Donald Trump, not yet tried, not before the Supreme Court, but if Section 1512 is found inapplicable to this kind of conduct in which Mr. Fisher engaged, that is insurrection, the kinds of things that Donald Trump is also charged with. He's been charged, accused of personally obstructing the certification proceeding at the January 6th event. And he also faces a separate count of conspiring with others to obstruct the proceeding, both obstruction counts under Section 1512. The Supreme Court review, potentially damaging to this indictment, would not affect the two other charges among the four that are also a part of the indictment against Donald Trump. One of those other charges accuses him of conspiring to defraud the United States by using the lies that he told that the election had been stolen in an effort to reverse his defeat in the election of 2020. The other, the fourth charge against him, charges him with plotting to deprive millions of Americans of their right to have their votes counted. And so, regardless of what the Supreme Court does on the Fisher case, those two counts would certainly survive. However, the reason why this particular case, the Fisher case, again, not identified as being affiliated right now with the Donald Trump case, is so important. Among the three cases, the 14th Amendment case, the absolute immunity case, this is the one. This is the one that we should all be focusing on with greatest attention. This is the one that has the potential to cut in half, the prosecution that's right now being advanced by Jack Smith in the district court in the District of Columbia. Now, is there a basis upon which the Supreme Court can, in fact, find that Section 1512 says what it means and means what it says, and the lower court was accurate in finding that it applies to Mr. Fisher? The answer is yes, absolutely. It can do that very, very easily. The lower court opinion is compelling, and it is a good, solid piece of jurisprudential writing. But, we don't have the clarity like we do in the other cases, the 14th Amendment case, the immunity case, where there is some clarity about what's going to happen here. We don't have clarity here. And if, in fact, the Supreme Court goes in the direction of granting Mr. Fisher's position, granting his motion to dismiss, finding that his position is legitimate, it plainly could, depending upon the nature of its opinion, also have this dramatic impact upon the very prosecution in which the absolute immunity defense will almost certainly be stricken down. And that's why, of these three cases pending before the United States Supreme Court having to do with Donald Trump, once again, the 14th Amendment cases, the immunity cases, and now this case, these cases involving Mr. Fisher and his co-defendants, these are the ones that we should be focusing on as the Supreme Court decides whether or not Section 1512 affects this kind of conduct. When we come back, when we return once again, the campaign of 2024 and into the coming years, the impact of things being said right now by the Trump campaign, discussing with the impact that they may have upon you as an individual here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation. Stay with us for that discussion.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is an advertisement for health insurance from Jeff Clark & Associates Insurance Services. There are many ways to purchase health insurance. You can go online, attend a seminar, or even call an insurance company. But when you are ready for personal, individual, professional, one-on-one service, come see us at Jeff Clark & Associates Insurance Services. We offer a variety of health insurance plans and companies to help you find the best plan to fit your needs. Come to your local agents, Jeff Clark & Associates Insurance Services, 3340 8th Street South, or call 715-424-4101.
The more than 27,000 union carpenters who called the North Central States home wish you a healthy, happy, and safe holiday season. Unions built the middle class, and union carpenters work hard every day to build our communities while they build good careers that provide for their families. This season, we hope you get to enjoy time with friends and family. Happy holidays from Executive Secretary Treasurer Pat Nelson and the staff of the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Move into the consequences not only of things being said during the course of the present campaign for the presidency, but also the interaction that we anticipate happening in 2024. The interaction, the interplay between these cases pending against Donald Trump and the very campaign in which he is right now engaged. Let's do a little bit of inventory before we get into the nuts and bolts of that. We know that in the coming month of January, two civil matters, both of them in New York, we know that those are still going to be on the dockets of the court. We recall well this case pending in front of Judge Arthur Engoron. This is a New York State civil property valuations case. Oral arguments going to be had in January. A decision presumably by the judge there in late January or February about whether or not Donald Trump civilly, along with his sons and the corporation itself, is liable for making misstatements based upon valuations. The judge already determining that as a matter of law. Now before him, the question of whether or not damages should be assessed against him. And what is the value? What is the value of the misrepresentations made? What is the damage done to the state of New York? That's the issue before the court, still pending in front of the civil court there in Manhattan. A second case, again, not much discussed, but except for in the past, E. Jean Carroll has got a second part of her defamation case. That one's also going to be going ahead in January, again, in a New York courtroom, coming out of her allegations ultimately of having been sexually assaulted by the former president in New York way back in the mid-1990s. A second defamation defamation case going forward in New York in January, just next month. And then we have these four criminal cases pending against the former president. We have spoken already this morning about this federal criminal election interference case in front of Judge Tanya Chutkan. That right now, the subject of this Supreme Court review on issues related to immunity, ultimately also issues related to the applicability of that statute. That's scheduled right now to begin on March 4th, almost certainly that trial date to lapse and to move someplace into later in 2024. Also in the month of March, the New York State criminal hush money case. This is the one brought by Alvin Bragg, who's the DA in Manhattan, alleging that Donald Trump and his cohorts at the time paid off a porn star to remain quiet about an affair that he had in the past, that happening right before the 2016 election, again, allegedly in violation of state criminal law in the state of New York. That also scheduled to go in the month of March of 2024. Then we've got the case in Mar-a-Lago having to do with the documents, the case in South Florida having to do with the former president's taking, his maintenance, perhaps even his use of some of those classified and non-classified documents coming out of the White House, the Mar-a-Lago criminal prosecution, also a federal prosecution, likewise being brought by Jack Smith. That is scheduled to go in May, although once again, that case may move in some other direction depending upon the pretrial proceedings between now and then as well. And then we've got the case right now scheduled at least on the docket for August of 2024. This is the Georgia State Election Interference case. This is the case being brought by Fani Willis, this 19-count sprawling indictment against 19 different defendants, rather. Many, many counts, many of them, all of them facing RICO charges. That case in which four defendants have already pled guilty, cooperating with the state authorities in that case, scheduled for August, but almost certainly to slip. The prosecutor there is saying that that case will take months to try. And indeed, all of these cases, March, May, and August, all of them likely to be rescheduled as the campaign goes forward, promising a very significant and tumultuous 2024. Why? Because all of these cases in one form or another going ahead during the time when the election campaign is afoot. We talked already about Super Tuesday, that happening in March and the events of that day. We've got campaigns going on throughout the summertime when these trials are scheduled to be conducted, into the fall as well. We've got conventions happening in July and in August in Milwaukee and Chicago. Possibility that all of these things can be happening contemporaneous with the trials of Donald Trump, civil and certainly criminal as well. And that leads to my promise to answer some of the questions that many of you asked about this interplay between politics and government in 2024 and a presidential candidate. And I've identified among those questions that you've sent to me four in particular that I found especially interesting, understanding that all of this is not complete speculation. There are some answers to some of this, but most of this falls in the category of untested waters. We use the word unprecedented a lot in America these days, and that certainly applies to some of the questions that you have most appropriately raised for me and others as we think about the interplay between these cases, the possibility of trials going on during the course of a campaign for the presidency, the possibility of convictions. How do all that interact? How do they interplay in 2024? The first question is this: can Donald Trump run if he is convicted? Let us suppose in either one of the state cases or the federal case, he is convicted sometime in 2024. Can he still run for the presidency? And this is probably the simplest answer among the three or four that we've identified here. The answer is almost certainly yes. The Constitution, as we've said before, sets very few eligibility requirements for presidents. We know what those are. You have to be 35 years old. You have to be a natural-born citizen. And you have to have lived in the United States for at least 14 years. That's what James Madison said about the obligations, the requirements for a candidate to run as a president of the United States of America. 35 years old, natural-born citizen, and live in this country for 14 years. There are no limitations in the Constitution based upon things like character or, more significantly, to answer this question, criminal record. Some states prohibit felons from running for state or local offices, but those laws do not apply to federal officers. And so while we know in the Constitution says the states set the time, the place, and the manner of elections, we've talked about the importance of that particular phrase in the Constitution when it came to the independent state legislature theory of this past year. But the best reading of our Constitution is you don't let the state add new substantive requirements. And so it's highly likely that if, in fact, one or more of these trials goes to a jury and Donald Trump is convicted sometime in 2024, that in and of itself does not prohibit him from running for the position of the presidency. We talked already about this 14th Amendment issue, the interplay there, and there's no dispute that if the Congress wanted to resolve that issue, even though it's going to be pending before the Supreme Court, it could do so. It could say things like that there are particular additional limitations on who the application of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment applies to. They could say, for example, that Congress could find that someone who has been convicted of a certain crime under the insurrection statute would be disqualified. They can give definition, in effect, to what that language in the Constitution means. The legislature does that all the time, right, when it comes to interpreting the language of our Constitution. Highly, highly unlikely the divided Congress is going to do anything like that. And so once again, important to recognize the Supreme Court will take that up. When we come back, a couple more questions you've asked about voting and elections.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette. Israeli tanks pushed deeper into central and southern Gaza overnight, targeting refugee camps where the military says Hamas is operating. The BBC's Yolan Nell.
We've had people continuing to flee from urban refugee camps. They're heading in search of greater safety in places like Deir al-Balah in the center of the Gaza Strip and also in Rafah in the south, right on the border with Egypt. That's now extremely overcrowded.
The Gaza Health Ministry says over 21,000 Palestinians have been killed and more than 56,000 hurt since the war started in October. A storm is bringing more massive waves to California following flooding and damage to homes and buildings Thursday. Kenny Powell lives in Ventura.
Not an ordinary day. We had the biggest waves we've had in many years. And we always look forward to the big waves, but Mother Nature had a little more than we had planned for.
Thin ice is increasingly becoming an issue in Minnesota. KBJR-TV's Dan Wolf on the latest incident on Upper Red Lake.
According to the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office, a total of 122 people were evacuated by boat from an ice floe after it detached from shore. The call came in just before 5 p.m. At one point, before rescue crews arrived, bystanders tried to canoe to the ice floe to evacuate the anglers that way, but four people fell into open water. They were brought back to the ice floe to warm in a fishing shelter. After 3 hours, all stranded anglers were brought to shore safely and no injuries were reported.
Police say a teenage boy who told them an intruder attacked his family is actually the true suspect. KGBE-TV reporter Penn Boris has more on the case in Fresno County, California.
Detectives have arrested a 14-year-old teenage boy in connection with the murder of two adults and the attempted murder of an 11-year-old girl.
Fresno County Sheriff John Zanoni breaking the shocking news Friday afternoon that the unnamed 14-year-old was arrested for the double homicide Wednesday night in the 47,000 block of Dunlap Road in Miramonte. They say the teenager killed both of his parents, identified as 37-year-olds Lou Yang and Si Vang, and attacked his 11-year-old sister, leaving her critically injured, all as his 7-year-old younger brother was inside the home.
An appeals court has ruled Capitol Police officers can proceed with a lawsuit against former President Donald Trump.
Donald Trump can still be sued civilly for money damages by January 6 victims, including injured police. And the court also announced it will hear 1 hour of arguments on the question of presidential immunity in Trump's federal interference case. Those arguments are coming up January 9th.
Scott McFarland reporting. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
If you're looking for a different way to ring in the new year, Wisconsin has its own version of the Times Square Ball Drop. It's the Big Cheese Drop, a giant glittering wedge of Satori cheese lowered every year outside the Art Center, known as the Times Square of Plymouth, Wisconsin, the cheese capital of the world. The celebrations include cheese tasting, music, games, and the Big Cheese Drop at 10. It's a family-friendly event. I'm Terry Barr, and from all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network, happy holidays.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app.
The moment you walk into Family Natural Foods, you know you'll have a great experience with excellent customer service. Their knowledgeable staff are welcoming and friendly, happy to help you with any questions or needs you bring in. Have you tried their oils and vinegars yet? You can taste test them before you buy. Some favorites among the gourmet balsamic vinegars include cranberry, date, and apple. Think beyond the salad bowl. These are great on everything from veggies to grilled meats. Family Natural Foods, 910 West Grand Avenue.
The deep three.
Deep three right of the circle. Badgers take the lead.
The throwdown.
Down the lane and sends it in and one.
The thrilling victory.
Badgers win it. Oh, did they dig in defensively tonight?
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Fakes the three, sidesteps left for three in the lead. He hit it.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Tries the lane, draw and kick, right corner three. Got it again.
The fastest hour in radio, serving truth, justice, and equality with every slice. Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Mike. Friday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, some patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy, 34. Snow tonight, 27. For Sunday, mostly cloudy, a high near 34. A little bit on the breezy side. For New Year's Day, sunshine and 32. For Tuesday, partly sunny, 35. That's Severe Studios weather.
Currently 26 degrees.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Felons in Florida regain their voting rights after completing their full sentence, including parole or probation, and paying all the fines and fees. But it's only then that a defendant, a convicted defendant like Donald Trump, if indeed he is convicted, would have the opportunity to address that issue. Highly unlikely that a Trump conviction would be followed by a term of whether it's imprisonment, fines, that all of that could be resolved prior to voting in November of 2024. Again, Florida prohibits felons from voting. He could also petition for clemency there, which would require the approval of the governor. Interestingly, that, of course, is Ron DeSantis, who's running against Mr. Trump for the primary process here, the Republican nomination. That process would also require that two Florida cabinet members support that petition. And all that, again, indicates that there is a process by which Donald Trump could seek to have his prohibition from being able to vote there in Florida addressed, but highly unlikely that he would be able to vote in Florida. He could also presumably go to New York. He's got a residence there in New York. He could switch his voter registration there to take advantage of perhaps a more permissive approach there in the state of New York. In New York, felons can vote while they're on parole or probation. But as in Florida and almost every other state, they're still disenfranchised while they are in prison. And so this issue of whether or not Donald Trump could vote after a conviction, even if whether he is or is not in prison, a very interesting one. Probably not in Florida or in New York. One of you asked, what happens if Donald Trump is elected from prison? And again, we're not quite certain what would happen there. We know that way back in the early part, more than about a century ago, Eugene Debs campaigned from prison cell, obviously unsuccessfully for the presidency. We don't know exactly how that would play out. In practice, the election of an incarcerated president would create a legal crisis, right? That would almost certainly need to be resolved by the courts. You've got a president who is obliged to conduct the operations of the presidency from prison. In theory, a president in that situation could be stripped of his or her authority under the 25th Amendment. You recall that's the amendment in the Constitution under which a process is there to transfer authority to the vice president if the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of the office. But that, again, requires a vice president and a majority of the cabinet members to declare the president unable to fulfill his duties, something that's unlikely under all these circumstances. All of that also underscoring, of course, the notion that the president could indeed, if he becomes the next president, could pardon himself, commute his sentence, leaving his conviction in place, but ending his imprisonment. All those kinds of things are possibilities, hypotheticals. We've never had to face those before. And of course, the Supreme Court might be in some way an arbiter of some, if not all, of that. Although, again, as we've noted in the past, the pardon authority is pretty much plenary with the presidency itself. not subject to a lot of review by other branches of government. And finally, this other question, what happens if all that before that happens, what if Donald Trump is elected with his one of these cases still in progress? Well, with the two federal cases, again, a likely outcome would be that if the cases are underway, he is eventually sworn into office, highly likely that this president would seek to pardon himself, may direct his own Department of Justice to drop those federal cases. More interesting, once again, would be the situation where you've got a conviction in the New York or Georgia cases, the state cases there. There, he does not have pardon authority, would not be able to direct the Department of Justice to limit the impact of those cases going forward, to stop them completely. All of this subject to a great deal of speculation. We know that in 1997, Bill Clinton, in a case called Clinton versus Jones, the Supreme Court did allow a lawsuit against President Bill Clinton to proceed. That case was civil, however, it was not criminal in nature. It was filed by a private citizen, not by the government itself. So a lot of things out there that are untested waters, not certain about how this is going to play out, but interesting things to think about, to ponder in this coming year of 2024 as we go into the new year in just a few hours now. All of that going to be the subject, obviously, of court review, legislative review, and most importantly, of the involvement of the American population, which we're going to talk about next. Before we get to that, however, in connection with our questions from you, let's also take a question from one of our callers. Mark, you've been waiting on the line a lot this morning. Mark, your comment or question, observation for our listening consumption this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much. And all this stuff links together. I mean, it goes from, it's interesting now that I see the Wisconsin Republicans are claiming the 14th Amendment as a reason for our state Supreme Court to look over their decision on the MAPS decision right now. It just seems ridiculous to me. The same Republican Party that here in the state of Wisconsin actually supported a violation of the 14th Amendment when it came to the fake electors thing. And let's remember the fake electors scandal, plotting for that probably began, well, could have begun even before the last election in 2020. That, of course, the doubts sowed about the election began before that, because Trump says, well, if I lose, it's because of fraud and in the election, and that that you have to tie all these little pieces together. That
absolutely,
it is just ridiculous. That, and then we're, you know, that it stretches credulity to believe all this stuff. And I wonder if you could address also the term that the imperative word shall in our constitutions, because doing a little research this morning, I see where some of the courts have, you know, they kind of negate the term shall, say, well, that should just mean should. And if you take that, if you move shall from the imperative word meaning must, is what it actually should mean, because my basis of, you know, when I was a state employee reading the statute, having to apply it, it shall actually means must to should. It would negate our entire Constitution, because then nothing is, well, we should do this, but we don't need to do this.
Obligations imposed, again, by the James Madisons of our world, right? And describing that language, you're describing these obligations in that imperative kind of a way, right? And you're right. There have been interpretations of that have softened that notion. When we think about a future presidency of either one of our principal candidates, obligations established, as you have said this morning implicitly, but previously also, Mark, the oath of office. You talked about that in a previous call here in our broadcast about the importance of the oath, that you are taking this oath to support and defend the Constitution. There are other language in the Constitution itself that, to your important point, requires a president to do certain things, including to make certain that the laws of our country are supported, that they are executed. That's where the word executive comes from, executive branch in our government. Those obligations imposed upon a chief executive by the Constitution. As always, Mark, appreciate your very thoughtful comments and observations about that. And they lead perfectly into the last portion of our discussion here in our last show of 2023. And that is bringing all of this together. Mark, as you just said, all of this connected. It certainly is. We have talked before about the significant things that are coming out of the Trump campaign. spent a lot of time talking about this attack on administrative agencies and why that's so important. But there is more as well. We've talked previously about the attack upon the Department of Justice, which continues to this day. But a Trump presidency also promising to erase that line between the executive branch, inside the executive branch, between the White House and the Department of Justice. It is also very important. And that affects not just things in Washington, D.C. and the presidency, but affects you and me, affects individuals when it comes to preserving the safety and security of our nation. That's what the Department of Justice, along with other federal agencies, other cabinet-level officers, that's what they're required to do. The call to dismantle that distinction between the Department of Justice and the White House, all important. We've talked previously about the likelihood that our immigration policies and procedures are going to be dramatically changed under a Trump administration. That affects who we are as a nation. Those are the kinds of things that implicate who our neighbors are, who our coworkers are, who our children are going to school work with, all those kinds of things that have always been a part of the tradition, Mark, that you described, and that are also, as we said at the top of our broadcast this morning, exclusively within federal control. They are required to be the subjects of legislation, should be the object of legislation by our Congress, and then executed by the president. When a president decides that he is going to do the kinds of things that Donald Trump is describing inside his immigration initiatives, that undermines that appropriate balance, if you will, not only between the Congress and the White House, but also upsets our tradition of welcoming people to this nation. A nation not founded, of course, upon immigrants in the wake of indigenous populations being here. All of that a part of our tradition as well. We talked previously about the possibility of Donald Trump's invoking the Insurrection Act. How does that affect us individually? The possibility of our United States military entering into our cities, our towns, our villages, and suppressing legitimate protests, which are guaranteed us under the First Amendment. That sort of thing is not insignificant at all. It's hugely significant. And we've talked then again about the civil service attack. Donald Trump promising to sign what's called Schedule F, that basically, consistent with this attack on the administrative state, this deep state out there, this distrust of the civil servants out there, would remove from them civil service protection and open them up to the possibility of being fired because of their failure to abide by, to follow the political directions, the partisan directions of a White House. We've talked generally about all of that as a part of the regime, the proposals being made by the Trump campaign in a second term. And so that leads us then to ask the question, as we began to do last time and beginning now again in this, our final minutes of 2023, to talk about what we can do not only to survive 2024, but actually to thrive in 2024. There is good reason. There is good reason to be optimistic, even in the midst of all of this, about what the future of America can be. But it requires ultimately the involvement of all of us as Americans. It can be overwhelming. It can be the kind of thing that prompts all of us to look at our situation and say, gosh, it is just simply too much. I'm going to retire. I'm going to move back. I'm going to pull back from involvement in the elective process, in the campaign process, in government generally. In our next few moments or so, we're going to talk more about the reasons why that is not only contrary to our legitimate historical tradition here in America, but also especially important in 2024, that we thrive and we be engaged at all levels, even in the midst of all the activities in the courts, out of the courts in 2024. All of that hugely important coming out of 2023 and going into our next election year, 2024. At the top of the list, of course, is voting. And yes, indeed, it is easy to say, yes, go out and vote as a way to exercise your civic responsibilities. Even so, it is important to say just that. Here in the state of Wisconsin and in many other states, we've got four opportunities in 2024 to vote and go out there to the polls. When we come back in our final segment, I'm going to talk about voting, those opportunities in Wisconsin and throughout our nation, and many other opportunities to thrive and to be engaged in 2024 in all that is our American nation. Stay with us for those final comments.
This is our last goodbye, and you don't care, so I won't cry. And you'll be sorry when I'm dead, and all this guilt will be on your head. I guess you'd call it suicide, but I'm too full to swallow.
This is the talk of lacrosse. Eagle 1490 AM.
Here's a new way to ring.
The more than 27,000 union carpenters who call the North Central States home wish you a healthy, happy, and safe holiday season. Unions built the middle class, and union carpenters work hard every day to build our communities while they build good careers that provide for their families. This season, we hope you get to enjoy time with friends and family. Happy Holidays from Executive Secretary Treasurer Pat Nelson and the staff of the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters.
Here's a new way to ring in the new year. How about some peace and quiet? December 31st is officially No Interruptions Day, a holiday first introduced in 2014. It's considered an important way to take a break from your everyday distractions by focusing on yourself, your family, and friends. Those who celebrate No Interruptions Day say it's a great reason to turn off your phone, TV, and social media to instead slow down. I'm Terry Barr. From all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network, happy holidays.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
And we are back for this, our final segment of our broadcast this morning, talking about reasons to thrive in 2024. To be involved in civics, be involved in government, be involved in campaigns, all kinds of things. And of course, at the top of the list, as we always say, voting. Voting is the key to everything, right? Where do we get Supreme Court justices? We get those from presidential nominations, Senate confirmation. Where do presidents come from? Where do senators come from? They come from voting, right? That's how that happens. Where do we get representatives in Congress? Well, Congress, obviously elected by the people. And indeed, we've got many opportunities here in the state of Wisconsin to do just that. Where do our elected officials in Madison come from? Similarly, from the voting booths of our state. Let's talk about specifically the election opportunities coming up in 2024 for all of us in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to begin with a spring primary coming up on February 20th. February 20th, the spring primary. Filing deadline for that, January 2nd. And that anticipates a major primary election here in the state of Wisconsin, the big one on April 2nd of 2021. Plainly, the contested race for the Republican nomination, also for the Democratic nomination here in the state of Wisconsin. Joe Biden will be on the ballot there, but also a Minnesota representative and also Marianne Williamson, also going to be appearing likely on the Democratic contest there on April 2nd, that as a part of the voting on that particular day. The Republican race, obviously, also going to be on the ballot on April 2nd. You've got two Wisconsin Court of Appeals seats in Districts 1 and District 4, and a variety of local and judicial officers also involved in races on that all-important Wisconsin primary of April 2nd of 2021. Then we've got an election on August 13th. Filing deadline there is June 1 of 2024. And that, of course, anticipates the big election on Tuesday, November 5th. What's at stake there? Well, we've got 10 presidential electors coming out of the state of Wisconsin on that day. We've got a Senate race, Tammy Baldwin, our present junior senator in the state of Wisconsin. She is running for re-election. Has a contest there as well. All eight seats in the House of Representatives here in the state of Wisconsin up for election on November 5th. 16 seats in the Wisconsin State Senate out of 33, all 99 seats in the Assembly. And so once again, we've got that spring primary of February 20th. We've got the Wisconsin, the April 2nd race on that date. We've got the fall primary of August 13th. And we've got the final election on November 5th, all of those elections coming up in the state of Wisconsin. not only voting ourselves, but getting others to vote. That's also a part of our civic duty and responsibility. And as many of you do, participating as poll workers. I'm going to be serving as a poll worker probably in all four of those elections in Waukesha County right here. Looking forward to that. Important to be involved, again, not in a partisan way, serving as a poll worker, but ensuring that the system works. And especially at a time recently when poll workers, much in our focus, need to be supported, need to be told that their role is hugely important to the administration of justice in America. Then we've got the third major recommendation here. In addition to voting, getting others to vote, serving as poll workers, the third major endorsement here is an endorsement to civics. We talked at the start of our broadcast this morning about Herb Kohl, education, part of his great mandate, his great focus when he was our United States Senator. We have talked throughout this year about the importance of civics, understanding how things work in our government, not just related to criminal prosecutions, civil prosecutions, litigation, but all the kinds of things that go into our civics in America. Being a part of the education process, engaging with individuals, I know that's easier said than done. A commentary there, instead of pushing other people out, inviting them in to discussions about what the facts are, what information is about there, out there, and recognizing, as we always do, that if we can fundamentally agree on the facts, we can disagree. Reasonable people can disagree on the policies that come from those, that derive from the known things that happen in our state and in our nation. Agreement to come together to talk through and confirm the realities, and then have the disagreements that we used to have about things like education policy and economic policy and foreign policy and immigration policy and all those kinds of things that are also going to be a part of the campaign this coming year. An invitation in 2024 to thrive through that discussion, not retreating from it, not retreating from difficult conversations, but being very much a part of it to ensure that civics are a part of our national understanding, that when we go to vote four times in the state of Wisconsin, we not only understand who the candidates are, that we recognize that people have different views on who should serve in these federal and state and local offices, but as a result of the engagement, again, not pushing people out of our discussion, but inviting them into our discussion, we can have a stronger America. And yes, indeed, along the way, we can limit what we have seen recently when it comes to some of the threats, the invocations to violence, which have never been a part of our civic understanding here in America. We fought wars here in the United States. We fought a civil war, a revolutionary war. We fought wars overseas to ensure that we've got integrity in our civic process. That cannot be compromised on the altar of threats and threats of violence against people who are there, like civil servants and like poll workers and people elected to our state house, our federal house. All those folks deserve to be regarded as in the important roles that they play. In addition, obviously, supporting candidates of your choice, that's also a way to thrive in 2024, to be engaged in the process, and yes, indeed, to read the Constitution, to go back and look at our state Constitution, the federal Constitution, and understand the language so that when you do invite people in and not push them out, you can use the language of our Constitution, of our laws, to animate those discussions. It has been my great privilege throughout this past year to be a part of your lives, to be a part of this discussion through the civic media stations. I want to especially thank all of the members of the staff of civic media, including the executive director, the president, the fellow who's at the top of all this. His name is Sage Weil, who animates not only the discussions right here coming out of Waukesha, but throughout the stations in the state of Wisconsin. It is my great honor and my great privilege to come to you every morning, every Saturday morning, to discuss these issues. I look forward to doing more of it in 2024 and beyond. Thank you for your contributions, your involvement with me in this all-important discussion, and have a safe and restful new year, everybody. Take care. Oh,
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Steel.
I'm Stacy Lynn. It is almost time to say goodbye to 2023 and hello to a new year. And many will be doing just that in New York, watching the token ball drop. CBS's